lot of interviews that anybody could do. It can interview anybody. This gentleman, other than Jerome Bettis, who was just inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, for whom I had the pleasure of speaking with earlier this year, this gentleman specifically really needs very few words. Part of an NFL defense that hasn't been seen since. This gentleman is a seven-time Pro Bowler, which doesn't, well, he doesn't need more introduction to me or anybody else. He was inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2013. You may have heard of Rocky Blyer, Mean Joe Green, Jack Lambert, Jack Hammond, the Steel Curtain of the 1970s. But rest assured that Andy Russell is the one who will never be forgotten in Steelers lore on an infamous line. Not only that, but Andy Russell worked under his three-star general in the Army while stationed in Germany, ranked second lieutenant. That's pretty high by today's standard, or any standard for that matter. Today, Andy resides in Pittsburgh and assists in operations for Liberty Tire in Pittsburgh. Welcome to the show, Andy Russell. How are you?
Well, I'm good, Rudy. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time that you've taken to speak to me today. How are things in Pittsburgh today?
Well, everything's perfect today. I just got back from a trip down the Danube and Budapest yesterday, or 1:30 this morning, and it's Pittsburgh. It looks great. The sun's out. It's beautiful.
Wow, excellent. Did you make sure you took a paddle down the Danube River? Make sure you got back safely?
I didn't take a paddle.
Okay. Well, as long as you're back safe, and that's really what matters. Let's kind of jump right into this. You were 6'2", on draft, 225. You were picked in the NFL draft of 1963, round 16, pick 220. That's kind of laid down there in the latter round, of course. You were a Steeler from 63 to 76, seven-time Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro, third-time second-team All-Pro, two-time Super Bowl champion, two-time AFC champion. And there's so many accolades here. The list is exponential. When we're talking about the 1970s Steelers, you played on a really vast line. We're talking Jack Ham. We're talking Mean Joe Green. These guys are forever embedded in NFL lore as being probably one of the best lines in the NFL. And we've seen linebackers come and go. However, working with this line, it just seemed phenomenal. And, of course, the NFL Network talked about the Steeler defense that still occurred in the 1970s. But you created penetration. You were almost like an assistant to Mean Joe Green and had some solid pressure up the middle on your own accord. Tell me about your experience on draft day with the Steelers, and what were your thoughts when they called your name?
Well, going back to as far as 1963, my father was a corporate executive for Monsanto working in Brussels, Belgium, and he called me at the University of Missouri, and he never would call me. I was allowed one phone call a month because he was Scottish, but he said, son, you have to promise me you'll never play pro football. Now, I wasn't considering playing pro football because I had ROTC, and no team's going to take me after I've been away 2 years active duty. So I figured I just won't be able to play professional football. But I said, Dad, just out of curiosity, why would you say that? They said, because it would humiliate the Russell family to have a son play a game for a living. You got to be a worker. You know, he's yelling at me from Brussels, Belgium. But anyway, because of that promise I made my dad, in those days there were only 12 teams in the NFL. And they didn't have tryout camps. What they had was they'd send you a questionnaire, ask you all these questions about your career. And the first question was, are you interested in playing pro football? I got 11 of those forms, and I said no. I was not interested. So that might have impacted my draft choice. And the only team that didn't send me one of those forms was the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why? Because they hated rookies. Buddy Parker just hated rookies. You want to know, nothing to do with rookies.
So when your name was called, what was going through your mind? I mean, they waited a while to pick you. They looked at it and said, okay, well, you know what? We're going to need someone down in the sixth round. No, let's go 12, let's go 14. 16th round, do you think your name was ever going to be called by anybody considering the circumstance?
Well, no, see, I didn't even know there was a draft, so I wasn't listening to any names being called out or anything like that. We had a bowl game in Houston, Texas, the week after that draft, and I went into the locker room to work out, and some guy said, "Hey, Russell, congratulations." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, you were drafted." I said, "No, I'm ROTC." I thought he meant I was drafted by the military. That's how far away I was from, you know, caring about being drafted by, or what level to be drafted at, or whatever. And when I got to the Steeler training camp, I wanted to make the team. I didn't want to fail. So, you know, I was trying the best I could. And I got very lucky by the very first game. I was going to be a special teams guy, you know, not play a lot, kicker, punter, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, not kicking myself, but running down and making tackles. Mm-hmm. And the guy ahead of me got badly injured. He was out for 5 or 6 weeks. And then the other, I wasn't even the first backup. The first backup was a 6'5", 240-pound linebacker. He went in and just broke his ankle the first play he was in there. So I go in late first quarter of the first game, and I start the rest of the year and make the All-Pro rookie team, and, you know, so I was a very lucky guy.
I would say so. It was just fortunate to call the next man up, and you certainly did that. You played your entire 12-year career for the Steelers. You earned a degree in economics, obviously helped you on a post-football career, graduated from the University of Missouri, and you were part of a fraternity. Was that something that you thought about doing when you entered college, or was this something somebody just whispered in your ear and said, "Hey, Andy, we'd like for you to join that fraternity"? How did that come about?
Well, that just came about because when I went a week early to school as a freshman, and they, one of the things they had you do, there were 31 fraternities in Missouri. And I got invited to every one of them, and I wasn't going to go to any of them, but one of my fellow I knew from school said, "No, we should go to the Sigma Chi party," and I went, and then he convinced me, because his father had been a Sigma Chi, so he convinced me to sign, but I convinced him that we should live in the dormitory, not go through hazing and that sort of thing the first semester, because we had a rookie team that was our team, not a fraternity house.
Right. You know, a lot of things can be said for joining fraternities, and of course, the first thing that comes to most people's minds is you get the hazing, you got to go through all the rituals and things of that nature. You decided to go the smoother, less, for lack of a better term, less interesting route, which actually proved to your benefit. You entered.
Yeah.
In high school, you moved from New York to St. Louis. You attend Ladue High School. Matter of fact, I have family from Missouri. Matter of fact, they still live there. In a real small town in the middle, right in the middle of Missouri, probably closer to Springfield, probably on the other side of where Mizzou is. And football's big out there. It's one of the largest entities, part of the, I want to say the ACC. I could be incorrect on that, but... you never really played football in the East, but you became a starter as a sophomore. How did that come about? Was it something that you had seen on TV and said, "You know what, I'm going to do something like this, but I'm not quite sure if I want to do this or play this particular position"? And did you start as a linebacker?
Well, I started out as a running back, and I started playing football flag football as a seventh grader in St. Louis, and then you didn't really play like regular football with helmets and pads until ninth grade. So as a freshman, I played on the freshman team, and I scored a lot of touchdowns and that sort of thing. And then my sophomore year, I had to play in the varsity, and the coach made me an end. And I didn't really like being an end. I wanted to be a running back. And then I went on to be a running back. My senior year, I I had such a good team behind me that was opening these gigantic holes. Anybody could run through them. And I was scoring 5 touchdowns a game, and I made, you know, high school All-American, and I got like 28 scholarship offers around the country, and you know, it just was ridiculous. And my father said, you can go to 5 schools, and that's, I mean, you can talk to them, and that's it. You pick 5. So I went around, and of course, the University of Missouri was the strongest competitor of all those teams, because they, you know, Dan Devine was the coach, and he had the governor calling my dad, the mayor calling my dad, you know, all the top executives in St. Louis calling my dad. So, you know, it was pretty sure I was going to go to Mizzou. Mm-hmm. And then Devine saw something in me that I didn't ever think. He says, you're a linebacker. And I said, no, I'm not a linebacker. I'm a running back. And so my junior year, I led the team in rushing, in receiving, and in interceptions. Because in those days, you played 2 ways. You know, nobody does that today.
Right, right.
But in those days, we did. And so I was all excited my senior year, and going back to maybe improve those statistics. And he said, you know, Andy, you get tired in the fourth quarter. I'm going to play you only at linebacker. And I was like, what? I was all upset about that. But, you know, he knew what he was right. And I wasn't going to become a professional running back. But, you know, being a professional linebacker has a lot to do with your ability to think and figure out what's going to happen. And so, you know, the nice thing about the pros is that they gave you so much information. Mm-hmm. They give you the past 3 years of every game that the opponent has played. Mm-hmm. So you know what they're going to do.
Right. You become a lot more self-educated because of the information that they provided to you. And I'm sure your dad was overwhelmed with all the phone calls. I mean, he didn't want you to play to begin with. And so I'm sure the calls were relatively annoying to him and kind of taking a lot of time of his to answer and go through the same motions and similar answers he'd given at any other university that had called. What was the last conversation you had with your dad about playing football, and did he just accept it, or was it something you just had a heart-to-heart talk with him about? How did that come to fruition?
Well, as I mentioned, he was Scottish. He was born in Glasgow, Scotland, came over on the boat, and was an immigrant. And he didn't want to pay for my college education, so he was quite happy that I was going to play collegiate football and have a scholarship to do it. And that was not a problem. It's the what I called the call he made from Brussels, Belgium was, I want you to promise me you'll never play professional football. Because it would humiliate the Russell family.
Mm. Wow. Well, you obviously picked a good sport. I mean, look at it like this. You were early member of the Steel Curtain. You had an MVP trophy in 71. Again, 7-time Pro Bowler. And then you did something that had not really been done. You had set the NFL playoff record in 75, December 25th. 7 to be exact, right after Christmas, so it was a Christmas gift to you, unbeknownst, 93 yards at Three River Stadium over the Baltimore Colts. Tell me about that play. How did it develop, and what did you think when you got into the end zone?
Well, that play, it is a NFL record for the longest fumble recovery for a touchdown in NFL playoff history. But it has another record that my teammates prefer, which is it's the longest elapsed time in any single play. Now, what they were joking about is how slow I ran that ball down the field. Well, what happened is I was playing with a very bad knee. The Steeler doctors had told me I needed surgery. I said, no, I'm going to play. And, you know, in those days, you could do that. Mm-hmm. And so I went out and played with all these bandages, and, you know, I could barely run. And I shouldn't have been out there. But here late in the game, with the Colts about to score, you know, Jack Ham goes through and makes a nice sack, and I didn't even get off the line of scrimmage, and the ball bounces in my hands, 93 yards from the goal line, and I start stumbling, waddling down the field with, you know, in pain, quite frankly. And I'm thinking I should lateral this back to one of my teammates, but then I realized that I had both sprained wrists and kind of a plastic thing on my wrist, so I wasn't flexible enough to lateral it. So I thought I'll let him tackle me, and you know, I just kind of cruised down this field, and you know, Terry Bradshaw thought that NBC cut for commercial and came back in time to catch the end of the run. And everybody had a lot of fun with that.
I bet they did. You know, Rocky Blyer had, you know, a bad knee. He served some time in the military also. One of those guys where he said, you know what, I have to do this, something that I have to do. And I remember meeting Rocky out in San Pedro a couple of years ago and sat down and listened to everything in his life, everything that had happened, including his time, you know, with the Steelers as well. And what also comes to mind is James Harrison and his 99-yard return for a touchdown off an interception in Super Bowl 43, which is, again, very iconic, especially for him because he was Defensive Player of the Year that year. Moving forward, you exited college with an economics degree. Your family was already business-oriented. They had already been acclimated to the business world. Post-football, how did you become a part, and was it a family business that you wanted to be a part of, or was it something that you wanted to do on your own accord in business with that economics degree?
Well, actually, I got my MBA. You didn't get that information, but so when I came back from the military, I was a rookie in 1963, 64 and 5, I was a lieutenant in Germany for 2 years, and came back, and I told my father that I was going to play 2 more years of professional football to pay for my MBA, and he said, oh, that's a great idea, so he was now backing me, and so I went back to Mizzou and got my MBA, and then I worked for a company that had some other young MBAs. One was from Harvard, a very bright young man, and he was, I thought, the most brilliant guy I'd ever, you know, been around. It was in the real estate industry, and after that 1 year doing that in the off season, this fellow moved to New York to work for a Wall Street firm, and he called me that year, that when I was playing and during the season, he said, Andy, you ought to resign from that other company and start your own business and syndicate my deals. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I'd never considered, you know, I always thought I'd go to a big corporation like my father had and then, you know, get a job and work my way up the ladder like he did. But he was now thinking of me as being an entrepreneur who'd start his own firm and run his own business, which I did. And the first year I did it, I made more money than the Steelers were paying me. And my wife said, why don't you retire? You're going to get hurt. And I said, no, I want to see if we can maybe win half our games someday. This was in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we did a little bit better than that.
Yeah, I would say so. That and that is an understatement. And forever you'll be remembered, not only because you stay in Pittsburgh, but also Franco Harris is still part of the Pittsburgh community and comes out for certain Steeler events, things of that nature. So you guys will always be remembered as being one of the best, not only NFL defensive linemen in history, obviously in the NFL, but one of the most giving back players you'll probably ever find in the NFL. I know that the Rooney specifically wanted all the players to be involved in giving back to the community. I was watching a commercial, 1975, where you were talking about a young man who had cerebral palsy. And, of course, you know, we all get older, things get grayer, and things of that nature. But it was an older commercial. I thought to myself, even as archaic as this commercial is, it's still extremely valid. Still need to give back to the community, be it in Pittsburgh or here in California where I'm at, or anywhere for that matter. I would assume naturally that this was something that was a prerequisite for you. Lastly, but not least, we're talking about the 2015 Pittsburgh Steelers had a big win against Arizona at home, which is a huge homestand, huge statement for Landry Jones. Obviously, there was some quarterback controversy in regards to who's going to start, who's not going to start. But defensively, since you are so familiar and an intricate part of those Super Bowl wins, what do you see out of the Steelers' defense, and do you foresee them going to Arrowhead and beating the Kansas City Chiefs, knowing how they're playing this coming Sunday?
Well, I know it's going to be a tough game. The Kansas City Chiefs has been playing; they've been playing well, although I think they lost their last game. But anyway, Landry Jones probably will be the starter. With Roethlisberger still hurt, so he'll miss another game probably. That's what I'm hearing.
Right.
And hopefully our offense can put up enough points to get this win. You know, the defense has been playing very well. They've been there. You know, they were a lot of young linebackers and young players that hadn't really proved themselves, but they are proving themselves with their play this year. So I'm impressed with the team, and I think they have a good shot at least getting into the playoffs. And then we'll see how far they can go.
Right. You know, there are a lot of sportscasters, things of that nature. You have your ESPNs and what have you. And they're stating that with Ben Roethlisberger coming back, this is going to be a team to contend with. Do you foresee that as being a possibility once Ben Roethlisberger comes back?
Oh, absolutely, because he is an excellent quarterback. And his records and his statistics show that. He's obviously going to, I think, be a Hall of Fame player, and he will electrify some of the wide receivers, and they'll catch a lot more passes than they have been doing, and they'll catch for more yards than they've been doing. So I think that will be a big change when he comes back.
Absolutely right. Well, thank you. This has been Andy Russell. I appreciate your time. I thank you so much for taking it. I know you're busy coming back from Budapest, but again, I thank you for your time, and just thank you for coming on today.
Well, thanks, Rudy. I enjoyed it, and I always like talking about the Steelers. Go Steelers!
Exactly. Here we go, Steeler Nation. Well, thank you so much. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Andy Russell and Rudy Rude Dog Reyes on the RudeDogShow.com.